It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The bills that passed Wednesday morning after a marathon session a week ago were debated mostly behind closed doors in private. The scope of this legislation is far broader than previous post-election extraordinary sessions, and we're looking at the lame duck session from a perspective of a Democrat and a Republican. Both of these voices you're about to hear, you've heard here over the years on the Ideas Network. Joe Winicky is a former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Joe, good morning to you. Thanks for coming by.
Good morning.
And John Sharpless is a professor of history at UW-Madison. He's taught for more than 40 years. He's retiring this week, a big week for him, and today is his last lecture. John, congratulations, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Big day for you. Well, the two of you, like the rest of Wisconsin, watched as this session unfolded. And before we dig deep into the details, what is your immediate top takeaway, immediate reaction from the lame duck? And John, you go first.
Well, I guess I serve as the Republican here. I'm a little embarrassed. This is just a sore loser moment. The Republicans had the state house. They had both the Senate and the Assembly. They had a way of pushing back on anything that the new governor wanted, and they wanted more than that. So they've greatly curtailed the governor's power. I think it's troubling. I think it sets a bad precedent.
Oh, Joe, what about you?
Totally does. I saw a statistic that really told me how this could happen. In this new age where everything is partisan, there are only 9 members of the state assembly on the Republican side that served when they were in the minority. So these people are drunk with power. They think they have all the power and they can do whatever they want, regardless of the fact that they got 63 seats in the assembly but only got 46% of the vote.
But Governor Walker even said, you know, some of this legislation has been in the works for a while. This is, and I know the word housekeeping has been coming up again and again, but these are policy initiatives that have been in the works. What is your response to that?
Hogwash.
If they want a clean house, come over to my place.
Well, okay, so does it set the tone, though, for what's to come? Is this the precursor for gridlock and partisanship? Joe, let's turn to you first on this.
Well, the section that most concerns me, I think most of it's relatively trivial, but I think the restrictions on the Attorney General are very troubling. Restricting the branch of the government that's involved in legal investigations and bringing cases to trial, the legislative branch shouldn't have anything to do with that.
Can't disagree with John on this. What's going on here, besides a power play by Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald, is they're trying to show that they will call the shots. I mean, give Governor Evers a chance. The people spoke. They gave him the governorship. Let him lead. What they're doing to this decent man, trying to strip away certain powers and stripping away Josh Call's powers, it's the new way with Republicans. They did this in North Carolina. They're doing it in Michigan. But that doesn't make it right. It is dead wrong.
Well, it's also gone on Democrat. In New Jersey and in Massachusetts, there were similar things that happened. But just because it's happened in the past, it doesn't mean it has to happen in Wisconsin. This is sort of reminiscent, I think, of old-style boss politics.
Yes.
And we always prided ourselves in this state as not being that kind of politics.
Well, over the weekend, Governor Scott Walker tweeted more than 20 times about legacy and about his administration's legacy, ranging from historical unemployment to keeping college tuition costs down. How is this shaping his legacy?
Well, this is a legacy, and just a negative one. I think Scott Walker has a chance here to leave office with some dignity. I'm not asking him to draw a line through every one of these items. There may be some favorites that he particularly wants to keep, but he could use his line item veto here in a way that he emerges as a statesman, not a hack politician.
John Sharpless and Joe Winicky are with us as we continue to break down the recent lame duck session from differing political perspectives. Did any of the issues that came up during the lame duck session play a role in how you voted in November? How are you feeling about how a campaign promise is playing out here? Join in 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in just a bit here on the Ideas Network. The morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is definitely not the first time in history that there have been partisan attempts to limit the power of an administration, but the lame duck session bills have made their mark. We're looking at the bills from differing political perspectives. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald defended early voting restrictions passed by lawmakers, and here he is Sunday on Upfront with Mike Gouche.
Many people in rural Wisconsin turn on their television and see people standing at the polls 45 days out voting day after day after day. But when they go down to their own town hall, the lights are out and there's no clerk there. That's inconsistency, and that irritates people and I think isn't fair to rural Wisconsin. It's the same discussion, the same points we made when we debated the bill last session. So we brought it back. We think it makes sense, and I think
you think it's constitutional?
It's fairness. It's fairness.
We're talking with UW-Madison history professor John Sharpless and former state senator Joe Winicky. As we look about this early voting, I want to ask first, Joe, a similar limit was found unconstitutional in 2016, and Democrats have threatened to take legal action again. Will this follow through?
Absolutely. I have not figured out why Republicans always seem to want to limit the right to vote. And I shouldn't just make it Republicans, although it tends to skew that way. The right to vote, to me, is sacrosanct. We should be making it easier to vote, not harder. And we keep throwing these roadblocks. And the real reason, which Scott Fitzgerald conveniently forgot to mention, is that he was worried that those voters came from Madison and Milwaukee.
Well, before John answers here, let's go to Tom in Port Wing on this. Tom, hi. Go ahead.
Well, first off, I would say voter ID produced this recent election, and everybody complied with it, and nobody was hurt by it. But I was wondering if your two guests could explain how the Doyle administration in 2010 dealt with their lame duck session and how that historically led into the Walker administration coming in.
Tom, great question. John Sharpless, or Joe Winicky, do you want to start here and then get John in?
Well, yes, because I was intricately involved in the 2010 vote. The Republicans are lying about this. There's no other way to call it. I don't think anybody here knows or remembers this, but I was at that time the head of collective bargaining for the state of Wisconsin. We had 19 labor contracts out. We had 16 settled. They had been settled for months. These had been negotiated for 2 years. Both sides had agreed. The history of the legislature was always to unanimously adopt those contracts that were bargained. These contracts, by the way, did not give raises. They gave concessions. And for these guys to say that the hardworking men and women of the state of Wisconsin who happen to be public employees had no right for those contracts to be bargained because they didn't want them brought in the height of the election for various political reasons. So everybody agreed we would do it in November. And then other things happened, Russ Decker. But that's the truth of what happened.
Well, I want to get John Sharpless in here. John, there is this plan that limits early voting to 2 weeks. What do you see as the impact there?
Well, I don't understand the urban-rural problem here. Is Fitzgerald saying that people in rural areas can't handle a two-week period?
I think he's saying that the town halls aren't always open, there is some truth in that.
Oh, I see what he's saying. Okay.
Because lots of times they're part-time.
Okay, I see that. So I suppose In that period, you're allowed to get an absentee ballot, though, aren't you? So that should make up for that deficit.
That's right. Nodding doesn't work in radio.
And I assume that since a big chunk of my family background is in rural America, I don't think he's implying that we're not intelligent enough to handle voting laws.
I hope not.
Is he saying that rural people just can't figure this out?
He's making up an excuse is what he's doing.
Oh, okay. I'm kind of muddled having come from rural America.
I went to a one-room schoolhouse, John. My first grade.
Oh, we're going to hear the Lincoln.
Yes, the Lincoln speech from that congressional race. Me and my twin brother were the entire first grade.
I know, and it was a blizzard every damn day, wasn't
it? Was. It
walking
was.
Uphill both ways. Republicans say the lame duck session bills are just a way to make sure they can negotiate with Governor-elect Tony Evers on an even playing field once he takes office. We're looking at this session from two perspectives with longtime guests on this program, UW-Madison history professor John Sharpless and former state senator Joe Winicky. They stay with us. Moving forward, do you think the lame duck session has set the tone for how both sides of the aisle work moving ahead? Do you see any chance for bipartisanship? You can call in 800-642-1234. You can tweet us, WPR Mornings. You're with us on the Ideas Network. News is next. Morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Opponents of the lame duck legislation are contemplating legal challenges to the bills that will rein in the powers of incoming Democratic governor and an incoming attorney general. These are bills that were passed by GOP lawmakers in an all-night lame duck session almost 1 week ago. We're looking at them from different political lenses here. Senator John Erpenbach, a Democrat from Middleton, accused the GOP of a big power grab, and here he is Sunday on Upfront with Mike Goucher.
Because we're looking at least 4 years of Tony Evers, and the idea of 4 years of growth, the idea of 4 years of opportunity for everybody in Wisconsin, no matter what part of the state you happen to live in, I think is in jeopardy, simply because the Republicans set the tone right away that they, you know, Scott Fitzgerald said he doesn't know Tony Evers, doesn't trust Tony Evers, but the frustrating part is we have a job to do, whether we're Democrats or Republicans.
We have a job to do, whether we're Democrats or Republicans. We're parsing that with John Sharpless, a UW-Madison professor of history. Joe Winicky here as well, former state senator. We have State Senator Bob Wirch on the line, a Democrat. Senator Wirch, go ahead. What do you have to say?
Well, good morning. First of all, I really enjoy your two guests. I've listened to them in the past, and they're quite good. But let me just say this. In the future, the key is going to be the budget. There are a lot of frustrated Democrats for 8 years. They've been in favor of legislation that's never gotten a public hearing by the Republicans. Things like raising the minimum wage never got a public hearing. And the people were for it in public opinion polls and local referendums and medical marijuana. The Republican leaders don't like that. So I could see items like that being put in as policy in the budget so that Democrats can perhaps make some headway on those issues. Now, there's always an argument about policy in the budget, but the word out there is, we don't want to lose these issues when we have a chance to bring them to the forefront.
Thanks so much for those comments, State Senator. John Sharpless, your reaction there, policy in the budget.
Well, regardless of what goes on at the lame duck session, the budget was going to be, I think, a tense exchange between the executive branch and the legislative branch. The agenda that Democrats are trying to bring forward has been largely opposed by Republicans. So I don't see their the senator might be right. They'll get debated. There'll be more public discussion of them. But I really don't see them advancing to the executive office, even to be signed off by the governor.
I don't know about those issues that Senator Wirch brought up, or if those would be in there, but here's how the budget works, primer number one. The governor will introduce a budget. It will be the executive budget of the governor. If I know how these Republicans are going to do it, they're going to call it dead on arrival. But the reality is they have to work off something. So while they say that bill's done, it's still the baseline for what they will put together. They'll take out the stuff that's particularly egregious. Eventually, the Republicans will pass a budget. It will go to the governor, and there will be a conference committee, and that's where the governor's power is. So they need to put things in the budget, and policy is in the eye of the beholder. And what will happen is, at the end of the day, there will probably be 20 or 25 issues between the parties, and the governor's going to get some of them, and the Republicans are going to get some of them. But that's likely the best way you're going to get Democratic policy in this next 2 years is in that budget. Bob is right.
Well, let me ask you this. The incoming governor-elect Tony Evers is on a listening tour this week, calling it like budget for the people and wanting to hear what people want in the budget. Is that a productive way, Joe Winicky, to figure out what you want to do with the budget?
Well, I kind of always thought letting the people be heard was a pretty good idea.
Well, I think that's kind of a gimmick. Going around the state and asking people what they want in the budget is certainly good in symbolic terms. And bless him, I wouldn't stop him from doing it. But I don't know if you really get ideas off the floor that can show up in a budget proposal. Because I've found as I've attended those, and as a candidate, I listen to people. They're often quite vague about what they want and they don't want, and it's often impractical in terms of the way it actually maps into policy.
And John, I agree with you with one caveat where I may slightly disagree. It won't be those individual items, but themes will come out. I'll make a prediction that you're going to hear a lot about health care in these.
Of course.
And that, you know, and that helps galvanize his desire to come forward with proposals. But when it comes to individual proposals by individual people, you're right.
Well, speaking of health care, one measure that was left on the table with pre-existing conditions, Governor Walker campaigned to approve legislation protecting health insurance coverage for those with pre-existing conditions. And another measure that did pass in the lame duck puts lawmakers in charge of litigation, allowing them to keep Wisconsin in a lawsuit to overturn the Affordable Care Act. What does that say to voters when you stump on things and it doesn't and it's taken away before you can even act on it? John?
Well, I'm really very, very concerned about the legislature determining the Attorney General's agenda, not simply in the area of the Obamacare, but larger issues. It seems to me the way this is written, and perhaps somebody in the Republican caucus can correct me, they could actually block criminal investigations of various things that legislatures are involved in, bribery, sexual harassment, issues like that. They could block an attorney general from investigating them. And I don't think anybody in the state deserves the private protection from investigation for criminal behavior. And the way I read this currently, they could do that. That's my concern.
Joe Winicky?
Well, and on the issue of health care specifically, the current attorney general was part of the lawsuit aimed at nullifying what we know as the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. All these Republicans all over the country just ran for re-election saying that they would protect pre-existing conditions. By doing what they did in this lame duck session, unless Governor Walker pulls a rabbit out of his hat, by doing what they did, they are basically guaranteeing that Governor Evers cannot get out of that lawsuit, or nor can Josh Call, the incoming attorney general. And that just violates the will of the people in the election. It's just wrong.
They can also hire private attorneys.
Yes, yes.
And that's just going to cost the state a lot of money that we don't need to spend. Hiring a bunch of Republican attorneys to employ them is a make-work program.
Oh, but it's going to happen.
Well, let's turn our attention to the 82 appointees. The legislature approved 82 of Governor Walker's appointees, which included appointing outgoing Attorney General Brad Schimel to the Waukesha County Circuit Court. How big of a deal are these appointments in the long run, Joe Winicky?
Not very, in my opinion. I looked at the 82 numbers, and yes, the Attorney General getting a sweetheart deal in Waukesha County to keep him having employment was the worst and the most egregious. Most of these were appointments to, like, I don't know why the governor didn't do them before, the Funeral Embalmers Board, the Forest Examination Board, stuff like that, if there is such a thing. But I looked at them, and the vast majority were just citizen appointments to boards and commissions we have. Should they have done it at that time? Probably not. It was a little slap at the incoming governor. But if there's one area where maybe you could make an argument, it might be that these things were in, just like I talked about labor contracts, these things were likely in the process for months and they just never got around to them.
This is a really old-fashioned American tradition that the outgoing party before the in the final hours appoints all their buddies to all kinds of positions. The most famous case was when John Adams' administration was winding down.
Yep.
He appointed a whole bunch of judges that were immediately nullified by Jefferson, and that led to the famous Marbury
versus Madison.
Yeah. Right.
So this is an old American scam. The guys going out try to find a job for their brother-in-law.
Yeah, curry a little favor before you go.
Joe Winicky, curious, what advice do you give lawmakers who followed Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and Assembly Leader Robin Voss along the party on this lame duck plan?
Well, I think what they have to look at is, first of all, this naked partisanship that's gone on by both sides has to come to an end. The public is fed up with it. Nobody seems to like their government anymore. And you've got a decent human being in our new governor in Tony Evers, who I think truly would be willing to work and forge some bipartisan agreements. Give him a chance.
John Sharpless, how about you? What advice would you give lawmakers?
I really think Joe and I agree way too often. I'd like to separate myself from Joe here, but I really agree with him. I think the public would like to see not unification of the parties, but a middle zone in which the job gets done. Most of these issues are policy issues. They are not, as they're often described, matters of principle. These have nothing to do with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These have to do with percentages, allocation of resources, very practical matters. You give a little, I give a little, we get the job done and we move forward. We try to save the state some money in the process. I think, Joe, we're looking at a situation. Remember those years where we didn't have budgets until
October, November, yeah.
By the end of the summer, into the fall, that's what we're looking at here. We could have a state that is actually unfunded for a period of time if they decide to draw a line in the sand and go to battle on these issues.
I think you're right, although we have been agreeing all day. And congratulations on your retirement, by the way, coming up.
You have to quit sometime.
Yes. But the other thing to remember in this debate is look at what the American people did in Washington and what they did in Wisconsin. They voted for a check and balance. They also voted to say they want the excesses of government to be stopped. Let's give them what they asked for.
Do you think there is, though, a middle ground? Can we come together around really big issue, like guns, for instance?
Of course you can. Well, maybe not. Don't bring up guns today.
Don't bring that topic up.
John and I will start arguing again. But there are lots of issues, including health care, including infrastructure, including public education and funding of the university and K-12 education, that, yes, you can come to a middle ground. Do I see that coming as likely? No.
People all across the spectrum agree that things like education and health are important issues to address in America. It's always a question of the means, not the end. The notion that Republicans don't want healthy people is just nonsense.
Right.
They just have a different way to get there. What that means, it's a policy question. It is not a principle question. It is not about liberty. It's about how you get the job done. Mm-hmm. And I think what we can agree on are a set of mechanisms to solve problems.
John Sharpless is a professor of history at UW-Madison. He's taught for more than 40 years, retiring this week. His last lecture is today. Joe Winicky as well, former state senator, former chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin. Thank you both for coming by.
And welcome to the former club, John.
Glad to be here, Joe.
I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.